Welcome to the Economics Explained podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. I'm coming to you today from the offices of Morgans, which is a stockbroking and wealth management firm headquartered in Brisbane, Australia. It's Australia's largest full-service stockbroking and wealth management firm with more than 240,000 client accounts across the network. Joining me today is the Chief Economist and Director of Strategy at Morgans, Michael Knox, to speak with me about what's happening with financial markets and how they're being affected by coronavirus and what's driving that. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Gene.
Great to have you here. Michael, you've recently written an excellent note called The Revenge of the Machines, in which you talk about why we're seeing these massive fluctuations in share markets, also in bond markets. And your hypothesis is that it's related to the way that all of these financial instruments are being traded now. So the lead to your article is the market is being sold down by machine trading programs focused on momentum. The fall will be brought to an end by a surge in Fed liquidity. Could we start, please, by just defining what market you're talking about, please? What markets are we talking about?
Well, in the piece, I was talking about the US equities market, but it's just as true of the currency market for the US dollar against major alternative assets like the euro or sterling. It's also true of the bond market. And we do econometric models of all of those markets, of currency markets and bond markets and short rate markets, but in particular equity markets. And in all of the, but I talked in particular about the stock market because it was the stock market that was being so aggressively sold off. And yep. I said that when you construct a model, a hedge fund or a trading organisation, that firstly, none of these assets are traded by little guys in peak caps running around an option floor or an exchange floor anymore. They're all traded by machines. And the reason that they're traded by machines is that machines can handle a large amount of transactions much more rapidly than is the case in individual trading. When I talked about the structure of equities trading, I said that when you build a model of an equity, you include the earnings of the equity you're buying or the index you're buying, and the yield on alternative investments. For example, that could be corporate bonds, or it could be sovereign bonds, or it could be other things as well. But when you build an econometric model, what you've got left is a stochastic. You've got a probability distribution of what's left over. And the way trading models handle that stochastic is by momentum. There's a whole lot of ways in which you can program momentum, but the idea is that the machine that you are employing on the day needs to trade first, needs to get that momentum signal first, so it sells before other people sell. So what you have, if you're in a situation where what's happening in the market has nothing to do with fundamentals, it has nothing to do with earnings, it has nothing to do with bond yields or corporate bonds, then what's left over is the market is being determined by the momentum signal of that stochastic, what's left over in the model. And so what I said was, in a situation where we're in a situation because of the epidemic, because of the emergency, that only happened once every 100 years or every 50 years, you can't build a model of something like that. So inherently, what those trading models are acting on is their momentum signal and competing with each other to drive stock prices down. And what's that doing as it drives markets down? It's exhausting liquidity. And you get a market that's fluctuating, a situation of of low liquidity, what you get is a high level of volatility. So the market will swing around in very high standard errors. The variation could be as high as 80% of the average price for the last 10 years, which is where we've got to. That means a VIX index of 80%. And unless you add a lot of liquidity to the market at that time, the market will keep slamming around like that as it did in the financial crisis. So what I said was that volatility would be, since there is no financial crisis right now, what we've got is a emergency caused by an epidemic. What would happen is the Fed would aggressively add liquidity to the market, and as it did so, that liquidity would burn away the volatility. And I think, given the actions of the Federal Reserve in the last week, that volatility could be exhausted in as little as 3 months.
Okay. Look, there's a lot to discuss there. So the VIX, that's an index of market volatility. Is that right?
Sure.
Okay.
So the VIX is the standard error annualized of variation in in this case, the VIX is the variation of the S&P 500. If you wanted to have the variation of the NASDAQ, I think it's called the VIXEN. But there's a volatility indexes for everything, for oil, for currency, everything like that.
Okay. And what do you mean by liquidity in the market?
Well, the simplest measure of liquidity in the US market is the TED spread. Now, the TED spread is the difference between US Treasury bonds and internationally traded US dollar funds at the same, say, 90 day. Now, the average difference between that, between 90 day yields, commercially traded 90-day yields in US dollars and US Treasury bills, is usually about 0.4%. Okay, now we're really, really lucky that the Federal Reserve had been adding liquidity to the market in the months coming up to this emergency. So in the week before the emergency hit, markets yields on 90-day internationally traded, commercially traded securities in US dollars were only about 15 basis points, 0.15% higher. Then they accelerated to about the long-term average, and we're accelerating above that when the Federal Reserve did its first action last week, and that is that it added $1.5 trillion to the repo market. Now, but $1.5 trillion US dollars is similar to the entire size of the Australian economy. So the Federal Reserve, its first action was to add an amount of money equal to the size of the Australian economy to increase the liquidity in the short-term asset market for US dollar securities, okay? And the purpose of that was to reduce this spread between the what was being traded in the market and US Treasuries, the riskless rate. Okay? And they did that, and they were being successful. And what I said when I first gave the commentary about this before I wrote the piece, I said that that would be enough to reduce volatility over a period. But since that time, what the Fed Reserve has also done is it's aggressively cut interest rates to between 0 and 25. Now, normally that would result in Treasury yields trading about 8 basis points and Euro dollars trading about 9 basis points, something like extremely low levels of interest rates in the international market. So that's the first, that was the result of the rate cut. And then in addition, they announced that they were going back to full-on quantitative easing. That is to say, they were going to buy $500 billion US dollars of US Treasury bonds, and they were going to buy an additional $200 billion of mortgage-backed securities. It's mortgage-backed securities that provide the background for home lending in the United States. We have a different system here. So it was supporting both the treasury market and the mortgage market. And since overnight, Steve Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary, about 3 a.m. our time, in a press conference, said that the Fed would now be adding an additional trillion US dollars to the market in corporate debt, because companies in the US predominantly don't borrow their money from the bank the way they do in Australia or they do in Germany. They borrow their money by selling US corporate bonds, and the yield between the corporate bonds and Treasury securities had blown out, just like the TED spread, the corporate spreads had blown out. And so now the Federal Reserve is adding an additional $1 trillion to intervene in that corporate bond market. And what this means is that there's going to be a lot of liquidity in the US equities market, and it's that liquidity which gradually burns away the enormous variations, the volatility that you have in equities markets.
Okay, so the problem was there wasn't enough money going into those markets. Is that right? Were there low levels of activity? I'm just trying to understand.
No, what happened was that when you get enormous variations in markets, that burns liquidity. So you wind up in a situation very quickly where there is no liquidity. And that means because you've got sustained low liquidity, then volatility could last all year. I mean, what you've got then is a true financial crisis. So when you add liquidity to that situation and you burn away that volatility over a period, what you're doing is you're saving the system from a full financial crisis. So that's a great thing about the Federal Reserve. It has an infinite amount of money, and it's to burn away liquidity, and that is what it is doing.
Okay, so the money's taken out of the market. Is that's the problem? When you said you've got these big swings and you're saying it's burned away liquidity.
Yeah.
So
you have to add back more liquidity to the market.
Yep.
To stop that volatility going on for an extended period.
Okay.
So what volatility is? You have a variation in stock markets, a price discovery market clearing. Okay. So the market can't clear itself. Well, what you have in a situation of high volatility is the market can't clear it. So there's not enough money in the system to clear it, okay? So it swings wildly so it can find a price in which there's money, there's liquidity, okay? So, but if you add liquidity to the market, it means it can vary in a smaller range in order to generate price discovery and market clearing, okay? So
That's good.
But you need more liquidity added to it, and that's what the Federal Reserve is doing. Otherwise, the market would be swinging wildly in order to clear itself.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation, Michael. Thanks for that. I really appreciate that. I'd like to go back to the machine trading program. So you mentioned that the bulk of this trading nowadays is done by machines, so by computers. They're programmed to take certain actions based on what the data is telling them. They get a live feed of the data from the markets. Could you just tell us, explain
primarily
what's going on?
Primarily what they're designed to do is to react to change in fundamentals, okay? So fundamentals in stock might be a change in earnings. So if earnings are improving, earnings are down. If the economy is going into recession, so most big swings in stock markets are generated by a turn in fundamentals. So you would anticipate that in all of the data for the last 30 years, prior to last week, all of the major sell-offs in equities prices were generated by a deterioration of fundamentals. That is to say, earnings were falling, okay? So the market will react to falling earnings by marking down the price of the asset. Similarly, if the yield on the alternative investment, whatever that is, goes up, the market will also be marked down because of that. And those are kind of fundamentals. Now, almost always, I have a model of equities markets, different equities markets, but the Australian equities markets, which explains everything but 6% of monthly variation of the equities markets. Of the US market, we can explain everything but 10%, Okay? So overwhelmingly, variation is caused by change in fundamentals. But on this occasion, you had a change which was caused by a once-in-50-year shock or a once-in-100-year shock, that the market doesn't have that kind of memory of data to be able to process that. So it had to clear itself, and in order to clear itself, it knocked down the price to discount whatever that possible disaster might mean, not knowing what it was. I mean, somebody was saying to me on Friday that the market was irrational. I said, the machines are extremely rational when you define their own terms.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it. Look, none of us at the moment knows just how long this shock could last, but presumably it will be temporary, whether it's weeks or months, we just don't know. And what you're saying is that if you're looking at fundamentals, you should be looking at the cash, the net cash earnings of the company over the next 20 or 30 years rather than just looking at what's going to happen in the next few months. Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, stocks, people are discounting stock prices, not for the next 20 years, but in the next year or so, you know. Forecast for the earnings for next year is really what most people talk about. And most models will incorporate that, as well as variation of previous data, so you can, you know, you've got a benchmark. So the thing is, we've got a problem which the briefing yesterday from the US president's presser, as they say, was that the emergency would last until the end of July. Right? Now, it may be that because we're in the sun, because that's the northern summer. So, and usually other types of coronaviruses burn away. You know, once they're exposed to heat and in summer temperatures, that they die, you know. And so there isn't the virus there to be communicable. The problem in Australia is, and I think financial markets are really going to be determined, like our market's been determined by what's happening in the US, not what's happening in Australia. Fundamentals actually are really good in Australia. And our major export is iron ore to China, and Chinese steel production went up 3% in the last month. These numbers came out yesterday, okay? So that suggests that we're going to have continuing strong iron ore exports to Japan, to China. And in the domestic economy, what actually drives the domestic economy is turnover and it's housing auctions. And housing auctions, a year ago, the clearance rate in Sydney was 54%, which was when everyone thought that the government would change, and the government that was going to come in had aggressive policies of removing negative gearing on housing investment and also increasing capital gains tax. Whereas that's 54% clearance rate. Last week, international pandemic and the clearance rate in Sydney, 77%. So what shows you is that bad economic policy is more damaging than the pandemic.
Yes, well, I wrote some critical things about that proposed policy. So yes, I take your point. Could we go back to this issue of momentum? Could I ask you what you mean exactly by momentum in the market?
Oh, well, different hedge fund managers. You should do some interviews with some hedge fund managers. And you'll find that they have different measures of momentum. The most sophisticated I know is that are actually used practically is an econometric momentum measure called GARCH, for example. Okay, so and that allows people to pick out, you know, variation within the day on momentum. So you can be the fastest on the day. Other people will have more prosaic measures like moving averages, which might allow you to pick up the best momentum on the month. It depends what your actual business is. what your time horizon is, or what your performance is, or your ability to actually execute trades is in the underlying system. As long as you can execute trades incredibly rapidly, then you can use a very sensitive, you know, system like Garch. But if you want to execute a trade, say, once a day, then you'd use a longer time thing, like perhaps a moving average. Like, it depends entirely on how your program, trading program, is set up.
Okay. Is momentum the same thing as trend, that idea that trend is your friend? I know that one of the schools or the philosophies that some traders adopt is this trend following, which is basically just try to ride the trend as long as possible. Or are they relying on momentum?
What you're doing is using human logic and try to understand machines in human logic terms. And no, that's not it. We're talking about rates of change of markets, which are incredibly quick. Okay. Things that will happen in the fraction of a second. In reality, what these machines are using, the machines have been driving this. So, well, you're looking at, like, at the longest you're looking at daily rates of change. So if your daily rate of change is declining, and remember, the Australian equities market has fallen almost 1,000 points, well, probably a bit over 1,000 points. It's fallen almost 1,000 points below fair value, which means it's fallen, say, 1,600 points in less than a month, okay? So what you've got is machines making decisions in extremely short time frames in this case, in practice. And it's a different conception to, well, if you have extremely inefficient markets, for example, you had the Latin American or the Argentinian stock market, there isn't the same type of econometric sophistication in that market as there would be in the US market. The market will be more driven by trend than by fundamentals, okay? And in that kind of circumstance, it will be valid for a human investor to say the trend is your friend, because the trend will be long enough because the market is inefficient. So it's sort of, trend exists, extremely short-term trends like this that we're talking about, or long-term trends exists because it's, like I say, it's caused by the stochastic. What's left over that you can't explain? If you're in a market that's very inefficient and there's a lot you can't explain, then trend will be almost everything. But in a market like this, where you can explain a lot, but you can't explain the effect of one in 50-year epidemics, then the market's getting out of the way until the Fed stands up and stops it, and that's exactly what we've seen.
Okay. Just before I ask the last question, Michael, could you just tell us a bit about how we can find more about your work on the internet, please?
Sure. I do a podcast every week, which is you can find – I go to Google, which is everywhere and knows everything, and one or two podcasts a week, and that's Michael Knox Morgan's podcast is how you find that. I also have a newsletter, which is on the Morgan's website, called Economic Strategy, and also my work appears in various Morgan's publications.
Great. So I'll post a link to your latest note, or the one I've just read on the machine trading programs, which has motivated this episode.
Yes.
On in the show notes. So
I'm sorry if we got a little bit too technical.
You know, not at all. This is all very good. I mean, it's helping me understand a lot of these concepts better, and it's sharpening my own thinking about them. So I really appreciate it. The last question I'd like to ask is about this concept of fair value. So you mentioned that in your view, or according, well, I better make sure I'm right about this, and this is why I'm asking. You think that the Australian market is currently below fair value. What do you mean by fair value, and how have you worked that out?
Well, I think the level of earnings has actually been pretty good. And I think, you wish you'd bought Woolworths and Coles shares a week ago, because they're now at the highest for the year, okay?
Oh, yes.
So it's terrific. So it's the underlying earnings. And like I said before, All the growth in earnings really in the last year has been in the resources sector because we've been exporting to China. Now, and the major single component has been iron ore. And I remarked earlier that in the data on the Chinese economy that was out yesterday, steel production actually went up in China for the most recent month, which means the demand for iron ore is rising. So, I'm not going to give stock recommendations here, but there's a whole bunch of the areas of the economy we're actually really healthy. And I also think that, very interestingly, people may be scared of a lot of things, but when interest rates are very low, they're not scared of buying houses. And I think that's another area of, will be another area of strength of the Australian economy. So I think the Australian economy is inherently strong. I think the decisions of the government, the amount of stimulus that has been added and will continue to be added between now and the end of the second quarter, will generate enormous strength in the Australian economy. So that when we actually get to the end of this crisis, when people believe that we've done everything we can do about Wuhan coronavirus, COVID-19, the market will return, and what we'll have is good fundamentals and a whole lot of money driving it to higher levels.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got an econometric model, so a statistical model where you're looking at the value of the Australian share market and you're relating that to earnings, so their reported profits, and also other factors such as the iron ore price and I suppose interest rates, without giving away your proprietary...
There's a whole bunch of things, but I mean basically all stock analysts look at earnings, okay?
Yes.
And not just this year's earnings, but where they think earnings will be next year. So that's kind of, that's a fundamental, the basic fundamental of all stocks. And the reason all where stocks are going up is everybody knows they're going to make a lot of money because everybody wants to buy toilet paper, you know? So... and that's why Woolworths and Coles are the highest price for the year, in spite of all this disaster with the rest of the stock market.
Okay, Michael Knox, that's been great. I'll have to follow your suggestion to chat with a hedge fund manager. I think that would be good to explore some of these concepts in more depth. And I think I'd love to chat with you a bit more too about some of these concepts, and particularly we could do this at another time, but the idea that you're just looking at the next year's earnings of a company and then that's a big driver of the share price just seems – it seems like you're focusing too much on the next year rather than the next 10 or 20 years, really. As an economist, where you should be looking at – you should be forward-looking and thinking about what those earnings are going to be into the future, discounting them back, it just seems a bit – well, very short term to me, but we could.
Well, somebody once said a week in politics is a very long time, and a year in stock markets, as events have proved, is forever.
Absolutely. Okay, we might finish on that point. Michael Knox, Chief Economist and Director of Strategy at Morgans. It's been great, very informative. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim.
We've reached the end of another Economics Explained episode, so thanks for listening all the way through. If you're enjoying Economics Explained, please tell your family and friends and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or on whatever platform you are listening on. Finally, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please get in touch. My email address is gene.tunney@gmail.com. Until next week, goodbye.